welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by Very White Guy.
And you are very white indeed. This is a momentous day.
I'm sorry. Am I Rachel Dolezal white or just regular white?
Just regular ass white. Regular?
Okay. Just checking.
So momentous day here on the Interracial John as the godfather of black podcasting is with us, one Rodimus Prime. What's going on, Rod?
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We're so excited to have you here and get into a bunch of bullshit that has been going on. We've actually been off the air for a while because we moved last week. We moved from New Jersey to Michigan. It's been an interesting experience.
A lot happened in those like 10 days since we podcast. Man. Seems like when we take a break, shit blows up.
Yeah, man.
Stop doing that, Twitters.
Yeah, Twitters. Keep it calm out there. If this is your first time hearing the show, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can also find us on our website, interracialjohn.com. And we are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. Again, that's J-A-W-N. And it's fitting that we have Rod on the show today because we use his five-star review system. If you leave us a five-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, we will read it on the show. You can also provide us feedback. We love feedback via email, interracialjohn@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 657-JOHNERS. That's 657-529-6377. And if it's under 3 minutes, we'll play it. And if it's not crazy, and again, that's courtesy of the black guy who tips himself.
You should just call it like the black guy who tips review policy.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a standard TBGWT policy.
Template.
That's right. That we all follow.
Because we bit your shit bad. Does that bother you? Or do you think of it as like a, you know, flattery?
At this point, man, so many people have like kind of used our template that I don't really get, like, there's nothing to be upset about. I really just appreciate the people that give us a shout out when they talk about stuff that we do, or if they kind of like, you know, take something that we've done and use it for themselves. I just appreciate people that give credit, because that's really all that you can do. It's not like we have some type of trademark on any of this stuff. It's just, it was a good idea when we came up with it, and we just happen to be, you know, the first people to come up with it. But that doesn't mean, you know, any truly good idea is going to be adopted by everybody, right?
Yeah, you got to get like Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe on retainer, right? Get some like cease and desist letters.
Yeah, man. Get Karen trademarking some of this shit so you guys can start making some ducats. I like it. As I mentioned, we moved this week, and we are now coming to you all from, well, today, rainy Michigan.
Pure Michigan.
Southwest Michigan, which has been interesting. We are living like college students in a rental apartment. Which
depressing.
It sucks so bad, Rod.
I for real got like my stereo on. Like, it's not quite milk crates. It's a step up from the milk crate. It's a wine box.
It's pretty bad. But if you don't know him, I'm sure you do. If you're listening to this show, then you for sure have heard of the Black Guy Who Tips podcast, which Rod hosts with his lovely wife, Karen. And, you know, they are consummate professionals putting out hours and hours of live content every week. You can find him on Twitter at Rodimus Prime, and you can find them on their website, theblackguywhotips.com, and you can search The Black Guy Who Tips everywhere. And as I mentioned earlier, he is the godfather of black podcasting, and so we're really excited to have him here. So I listen to your show faithfully. I'm like, you know, a TBGWT addicts, I guess, would be a good way of putting it. Do you find most people are like that, or do you see more dibble and dabblers these days?
I'm gonna be real. I don't keep track because I don't want to have like the I don't want to have an ego about it or expectation. And you know, as an artist, as a creator, I'm still sensitive about my shit, right?
Yep.
And I feel like everybody has a season for everything, and people fall in, people fall out. Some people are lifelong. Some people listen every day. I'm a podcast listener myself, and just depends on the show, right? Some shows I grew up with, and I'll just continue to, I'll never miss an episode.
Right.
And then there's some shows where I'm like, I don't have the time. I'll try to keep up as much as I can, or I've come in and out on different topics. So I'm sure our show fits in that category for a lot of people. And there's a lot of people that probably just don't even listen. And I honestly, I assume everyone hasn't heard the show or doesn't listen or hasn't heard what I'm talking about unless they're specifically citing something from the podcast.
Right.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
That's a, for me, I take that assumption a step further. Like, nobody listens.
Oh, I assume absolutely nobody listens to our show.
Five, ten listeners. Tens
positive,
of people.
And I'm positive that most of them, like, knew me since I was seven. So I'm sure nobody listens to the show. It helps me, so I don't have to worry. I don't get nervous that way.
Maybe that's right. I can't get, I feel weird. Like, I'm not going to push it on, like, my friends and family and shit. Like, oh, this is my podcast. Like, that seems, like, kind of, like, weird. That's just not my style. But, like, none of my friends or family listen to it at all. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But none. Not my mom. Nobody.
I like to think the only way that I would be able to do our show the way we do it is we have to do it like no one's listening, because then you can be honest. And you can be true to yourself, because I think once you start thinking about other people and what they're going to do and say and react, and if your mom's going to hear it or whatever, and then all of a sudden that comes across in the show and in the relationship with your fans. So, you know, I try, you know, while keeping an open relationship with our fans, I also try to be like, well, let me say this opinion and maybe it won't be well received. You know, like, I think when we started doing this podcast, there just weren't a lot of left-leaning black voices anyway. I just tried not to think about how many people were listening, because I'm sure some of the stuff we said would have been, like, I would have stifled it if I thought at the beginning, like, oh, my God, what if a million people hear this? They're going to be mad and, you know, and, like, what if, you know, what if my mom hears that I don't like church and I don't ever want to go again? You know, like... Right. I just don't even think about that. And honestly, in my personal life, not a lot of people were listening at the time, and because they just didn't know how big it could be or how big it was when it did get big. So I've never really had to worry about it. And also, it's authentic. So the discussions we have on the show are the discussions I have with my friends. So it's not like, if, you know, like, they would find me out, like, right. Rod, you care about racism? Like,
oh, hilarious. Yeah, that's totally true. And I mean, to me, that's one of my favorite things about your show, is how authentic it is and how natural it is, the conversations that you have with your guests, with, you know, the people in the chat room, and of course with Karen, which is, you know, the best part of the show, is the two of you, you know, just bringing your normal dynamic to the masses. Which is something that it's the only reason why we decided to do a podcast at all, was because I was like, oh, hey, that's kind of interesting. You know, people always talk about how we argue well with each other. So it might be fun to do a podcast where we get to argue all the time.
Do we argue well? I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I put a pin in that.
Yeah, we'll put a pin in that one.
Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced we argue perfectly.
So we if anybody out there ever gets to come on the show, we have a very short survey that we send out just asking contact information. One of the questions we ask is, any additional questions you have for the interracial John and Rod? Answered it this way. This sounds like work for me now. You come up with the question, I got the answers. That's the best response we've had thus far, Rod. I just want you to know. Very, very funny. I love it.
Are we done questioning Rod?
I'm not done questioning. Okay. You can go ahead.
I had a couple questions. One, I was going to ask Rod if you feel like, you know, so like podcasting is a little bit different, and you interact with your audience a lot. Like, you're on different platforms like Twitter and Facebook, and you got, you know, tons of content. Do you think that people, you know, you just said that it's very authentic and genuine. You know, do you feel that people that are fans of the show, like, they know you, like, they feel like they know you, like, oh, Rod and I would be best friends if we lived in the same city. Like, how do you think people that listen to the show that really, like, you know, have heard you for potentially thousands of hours, what do you think they feel about the relationship?
I think they definitely feel like they know me. Sure.
You're talking about them DMs now, aren't you? Them DMs coming.
I think, well, you know what it is? I think no matter how long you do anything, people hear what they want to hear. And I think one of the reasons I'm very protective of the idea of, like, going in on celebrities and stuff, and I always kind of push back, is because in some people's eyes, they'll see me as a celebrity and I'm nowhere near it, right? But when you start seeing the difference in the reaction between someone seeing you as a person and someone seeing you kind of as, like, a person that represents a thing, you start realizing the slippery slope to like losing your humanity. And so I do think I can be friends with a lot, you know, like a lot of our fans, but I don't really covet the fan relationship because I want to be a normal person. I don't want to come in and be like, I have a podcast. Now you guys need to follow my lead on this, because I feel like that's just so, it's not in my nature, you know what I mean, to try to dictate what someone should or shouldn't think or say based off of things like that. So I think the relationship has to be two ways. And the thing is, I only have so much time, so I'm only going to be friends, quote unquote, with so many people.
Right.
And then there's sometimes where, like, as an introvert and as a person that I don't really have very many surface friendships, like pretty much all my friendships are like intimate, right? I don't do certain things well, and I overanalyze certain interactions. So while it might make for a good podcast, it probably makes for bad interpersonal relationships sometimes. So like, for example, if I go to the movies, and this happens every time, but the guy goes like, enjoy your movie. I can't help but think to myself, like, who the fuck are you to tell me to enjoy the movie? I don't know if I'm going to enjoy the movie. I mean, of course I want to enjoy the movie. I just paid for the movie, but I might go in there and this shit might suck. So, but all they're really thinking is something nice. And that's hard for me to shut off. So, you know, it can actually, you know, be good and bad sometimes, you know, and I'll argue with a fan if I think they're wrong. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? So like, I don't think, well, this is my fan and they like a podcast and they like me. I don't even think like that. I think, well, if you like me, I should be able to disagree with you and we should still be friends on the back end.
Right. I think that's like the integrity that you bring to the space too, though, is that quality that you're able to be yourself. And I had this situation happen with Drew. He has a lot of followers on Twitter because he tweets a lot as very white guy about, you know, anti-white racism and just
anti-black
racism.
Oh,
yeah.
Anti-white.
Anti-black
racism. I do not tweet about anti-black.
Sorry. Anti-black racism, but for white people.
Correct.
And there came a point where he had gotten so many followers specifically following him for that purpose that, you know, when he tweeted stuff out, it started having a weight that he didn't really realize it was having. And it turned into kind of this other thing that he never intended for it to be. So
that can
slip away from you because you don't realize that you're still just a person, a guy, a girl, whoever. And people forget that when they think, oh, well, it's this persona or it's this other thing.
And what you're talking about, like, the couple of things I would say I fucked up, but like I would, you know, with a couple hundred followers, like, I get to tweet all kinds of horse shit and didn't mean it any difference. You're like, oh, you know, my cat ran over the road, this, that, didn't matter. So with a few more people kind of like, there's that expectation. And even last week I was bitching about, what was it, Leslie? Verizon, U-Haul? Who was I bitching about? It was
Verizon.
I was bitching about Verizon. And I'm still, you know, Maria, if you're there, you haven't called me. It's almost 9 o'clock, Maria. And this is for real. This is the customer service rep at Verizon. I don't know if this is like white male privilege. She like called me back. She's like, oh, let me take your number. I'm going to try and figure this out. Like, I'll keep you back. But we were on for like an hour. But anyway, I'm bitching about it. I'm bitching about it on Facebook. And I'm not going to call the person out, but someone was like, oh, you know, and meanwhile, like, oh, this protest was happening in McKinney. I was like, I can fucking like be mad about my internet service at the same. I can walk and chew gum too, you know, like, what the fuck?
That's always interesting is the space people occupy in your mind compared to who you actually are. You know, like, I think Ta-Nehisi Coates is one of the most, like, brilliant minds on, forward-thinking minds on race at the moment. But, you know, there's days where he just wants to talk about Marvel Comics,
I was
right?
going to say, I love when he nerds out. It's my favorite.
Right, and then, like, right, honestly, like, I only really have him on my list because of that kind of shit. I talk about race enough, right? But I love when he nerds out about something because I'm just like, oh, yeah, I love Spider-Man 2 or whatever, right? But then he'll be talking about Spider-Man and you'll just see someone come in and be like, hey, man, I didn't follow you to hear about comics, man. What do you think about what's going on in McKinney, Texas? And you're just like, wow, like, you think you own that guy because you hit the follow button. That doesn't even make – like, we're not a juke – no one's a jukebox. They're, you know, I'm a human being. You're a human being. Social media gives you 24/7 access to – human beings, and human beings don't ever 24/7 anything unless they're just some kind of fake ass brand, right?
Word. very fake.
True.
Or they create some alternative version of themselves that's not real. And nobody wants to follow or even read or have any interaction with people that
I've said that, maybe not on the podcast specifically, but Leslie and I, you and I have had this conversation specifically. You know, the Twitter handle, Very White Guy, I'm not going to go as far as to say it's a persona, but in the same sense, it's not me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not who I am. It's a part of who I am, and it's something I believe in, and I use that platform. You know, there's like a purpose to it now in terms of like disseminating information, but it's definitely not me. And well, I don't tweet about me.
It depends on how you use, because that's the other thing too, right? No one uses it the same. Everyone uses it different. You know, for me, I might be live tweeting Game of Thrones, and then later I'll be talking about the gender dynamics between black men and black women when it comes to Rachel Dolezal or whatever. So like, it varies, and I covet that a lot. Like, I don't ever want to be just stuck to one topic or whatever. So but other people, that's all they want to do. You know, there's some people that are like, this is my brand, this is the thing I talk about, and after, you know, and I'm done with this social media stuff unless it's only, you know, specifically this thing.
Right. Mm. Yeah, that's definitely something. Speaking of Twitter, while we were on our journey here to Michigan, one incredibly irrelevant 90s talk show host, Montel Williams, decided to jump on Twitter and for some reason have a discussion about DeRay McKesson. Now, honestly, I don't even actually know the story. It got so bizarre right away because his tweet was so obtuse. It was as if he was starting a conversation in the middle and nobody knew the rest of the conversation occurred, which happens a lot with irrelevant people when they try to go on Twitter and become
exposure
relevant.
Exposure trolling. His first tweet was, DeRay is no MLK. Let's just get that real clear.
Has anybody ever asked him anything?
Right.
I just don't even understand it. And the, of course, Black Twitter, per usual, you know, took to him and went and took him to task. But I just, it made me really start thinking about the pressure that some of these young activists are under when grown ass men are coming out telling them they're not some MLK, as if that's what they're supposed to be. It's such an assumptive statement to make. And, you know, when you see somebody like DeRay and somebody like Netta or Dante Berry or Sherelle Brown or Erica Totten, so many of these young people that literally put their lives on the line, they get death threats. They have legitimate people that are trying to harm them and come after them. And what have we created in this social network atmosphere that would make somebody like Montel Williams, who, just so I'm clear, sells high mortgage rate loans to black people for a living.
Shit. Like,
I don't really criticize most people that do the work in any real capacity, because it's very difficult what people are doing. And I feel like the bigger they get and the more they try and the more people they affect, the more BS they have to deal with, the more pitfalls, the more things can go wrong. So I try my best to, like, you know, if I disagree with something they said, of course, I'm willing to be like, I disagree. But I try my best not to be like, oh, F the NAACP, or, you know, forget Al Sharpton, or screw Netta. And like, because it's too hard to do what they do. Mm. And on some level, everybody's like, if they have an organization, then you have people in the organization that believe and they're working hard and they're helping someone. It might not be me, but they're helping somebody, right? So when you see a guy like Montel Williams do something like that, my first question is always like, so what show are you going on today?
Yep. Yeah, what book is he selling?
Yeah, because you don't talk about this on the regular. You hop into Twitter, and I am convinced, and I've been convinced for some time, that the Black Twitter reaction has become monetized at this point. Yep. And some people throw the bait in the water, and I'm not a person that polices the black community, like, don't take the bait. We're human. We're like, you're going to have a reaction to some infuriating shit. That's just what we, you know, any person would. So it just kind of sucks that, you know, guys like Don Lemon, Montel Williams, just pretty much everybody on Fox, they know that they can monetize that and get that attention and get those numbers from
clicks.
Twitter.
Yep.
know, and it, and that is really the saddest part of it all is, you know, I'm watching people going on Montel, but I'm like, now you watch them be on TV, and then people are going to tune in to watch the interview so they can mock them.
There'll be a think piece.
There'll be 10 absolutely. Think pieces about it. I've started doing this thing where I refuse to actually put the name or entity of the person whenever I'm doing any responses. So I'll say, like, that dude, that irrelevant talk show host. I'll, like, purposely never put their name or hashtag them or anything, because then I get my personal feelings out, but they're not. I'm not going to be included in their little algorithm about whatever whoever was tweeting about them, because it is really irritating. And I know Rod and I, you and I have had this conversation. I actually wrote a blog piece about it after you and I talked about it a long months and months and months ago about this exposure trolling, when that marketing company did that hanging tree thing a while back. And I realized then you had said it like a couple weeks before that happened, and then that happened, and I was like, nobody knew who the fuck these people were until they decided to come and troll black people like this purposefully. So now everybody knows who the hell they are. And again, right. I won't say their name either for that exact reason.
It's sad because, like, whatever boost you're going to get is not going to last, because, you know, I guess I'll just never understand the idea of negative attention. Like, well, it's good because it's attention, because, you know, I personally will say the name of anything I have a problem with, because the message I want to get across is
he's gone again.
There he goes again. The hell? Why does it keep dropping out?
I don't know. It's so weird.
You got a lot to edit into. Try. I changed the Ethernet. Was Wi-Fi still on?
You know, Wi-Fi is still on, but now it's saying that I'm not online on Skype. It's like Skype is messing up. It's putting me offline. Okay, now I'm back.
Are you in as Leslie?
Yeah, I'm in as me.
This would end with him was, you know, we'd all just be like, we don't respect this guy.
You know, I've had a policy for a while. Is there an echo? Where did that just come from? I heard an echo. Sorry. Are you still there, Rod?
Yeah, I'm still there.
You know, I've had a, just for me personally, if somebody's doing any good at all in some regard, you're going to have a difference of opinions as to what people think. You know, DeRay's getting attacked from here and there, whatever. I have a policy. Just don't tear people down. If they're doing some, even like, you know, I know there was a lot of people tearing down the, was it FCK hate, fuck hate, had the like, racism's not over, but I'm over it, and had the video with the little kids, you know, like, oh, here's a cookie. Like, one of my friends is black. And there was, you know, I would say justifiable criticisms about, you know, exploitation of, you know, black pain and, you know, using kids. But I, you know, personally, I think, well, okay, maybe it wasn't perfect, but I don't think it was worth, like, tearing it the hell apart, you know? And I don't think that's what even Montel was doing. Montel wasn't necessarily tearing them apart. He was just taking a cheap shot to fucking make money, like you're talking about exposure trolling.
Like, there's a difference between, like, legitimate critique, because I think critique doesn't throw a person out to the, you know, like, remember the street harassment video?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, like the street harassment video, right? A lot of people were like, well, there's some elements of racism in this, so the whole thing's out now. We can't talk about street harassment. And it's like, you know, and I'm a black man, and I felt like, yeah, this does kind of paint black dudes in a bad light, but nothing paints black dudes in a bad light like street harassing. Like, the fact you wouldn't be on this video if you didn't do the shit. So, while I can have a critique of being like, yeah, they might could have diversified the races a little better. If that's, you know, if the footage was doctored, by the way, maybe that's actually the footage they got from the places they walked and all this other stuff, right? Mm. Maybe they didn't even consider any of that. They just thought we'd walk in the busiest places and bam, right? Who knows? What I do know is I follow so many women that talk about street harassment on a daily basis. To throw that whole video out, which really illustrates a point that you can't just walk down the street unbothered, is more of a problem than me.
Most definitely. Yeah, but you can critique something without devaluing what it brings to the table. And a lot of times in this think piece era, we've lost sight of that fact that you can, as Drew said earlier, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can evaluate the things that are problematic about something while still recognizing the merits that it brings as well.
And I think too, when you say
there's nuance,
that's exactly right. It's how you do it. Like, you can critique something just to tear it down. You can critique something that's worthy, and you can critique something that's worthy and be like, listen, I care about this thing, you, this organization, and I want it to be better. So I don't critique you because I hate you. I critique you because I care about you. And I think here's an opportunity for improvement. Like, I don't think that's bad at all. It's,
yeah, I think a lot of it is because of social media, we really got like rewarded sometimes for some, like, for who goes the most in.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can, like, we can lose the track, lose the thread. So I'm always kind of on the line both ways where I'm like, all right, I don't want to go, I don't want to see, like, participate in just like a mob, like, internet, like, mob on someone. But at the same time, I would never police the mob, quote unquote, when they're right.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, it's, you know, and you have to approach every situation individually. Mm-hmm. And, hope that something positive can be gained out of it at the end.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into some news.
All right, hold on. I need to dig a news.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So Cleveland, leaders in Cleveland decided this week they bypassed the prosecutors to seek the charge in the Tamir Rice case. They used a very little known and little used law in Ohio that allows residents to request an arrest without approval from the police or prosecutors. It's difficult to know how the case will play out because there's little precedence for a citizen to request an arrest in such a contentious, high-profile case. But the judge that it was set before has said that he finds a warrant for these police officers to be arrested in the death and murder of Tamir Rice. I find this very interesting on a number of levels. One, because it shows just the utter lack of, I guess, security that anybody has or thought that they have about the prosecutor's office in Ohio and what, you know, that justice could ever be served through the means that they're supposed to go through. You know, we've been waiting 7 months now for these people to conclude whatever investigations needed to be concluded. And this judge took a week to say, yep, this motherfucker needs to be arrested so we can decide what happened in court. It's just crazy to me. I don't know what's going to happen from here. I think it's a very interesting way that they decided to go. But I also think that Cleveland left them very little recourse at this point, 7 months into this case. I mean, it took almost six months for his family to even be able to lay him to rest because they were doing this investigation for this long. I have seen very few things that infuriate me as much as the way these families have been treated after their loved ones have been killed by law enforcement. It's really just been the most disgusting thing that I've encountered in all of my social justice work is seeing how these families are treated.
And it's for money. They do it because they don't want to have, they're trying to limit liability. So their policy is zero information. They don't say nothing. Nope. They don't do nothing. They don't tell you nothing. So there's just zero information. They don't give any information at all because they're trying to limit the liability. And it ends up, just as Leslie said, grotesque for the parents. Tanya Brown in Philadelphia, our former city, was told nothing other than we killed your son for 6 months. Nothing. Zero information. And then after 6 months, and I think freedom of information and probably legal help, got to sit down in a prosecutor's office or in a, you know, police officer's office and watch the video. That was it. They didn't give her shit.
And it's just so scary because the prosecutors need the police in every other situation.
Yep.
So, like, the system is just so fundamentally stacked against victims of police brutality or you know, fatality, that it's almost like it's such an uphill battle. It's like a miracle anytime one of them even gets, like, indicted, you know? Like,
for real.
That's not even, like, that's not even a trial, you know? Like, I don't even get surprised when they get off in a trial anymore. You know, I get surprised when they get indicted because I'm just like, oh, wow, someone did their job.
In Philadelphia, I keep thinking our city. It's no longer our city. It's only been like 5 days. But Philadelphia, they had that entire, like, tactical crime unit, right? They let them all off. And these guys were in for, like, they got indicted on racketeering and theft. They were breaking into places, stealing money from drug dealers and selling drugs. Oh, my God. It was like
they were running
absurd,
a drug ring, literally.
Absurd.
Stealing from criminals.
Totally scot-free.
And running a drug ring. And they just
one of them was
them
a star witness. Like, Like, how do you not win that case, you know? And it's like, do you even really want to win that case?
No, they don't. And, they, you know, don't. We saw that in the Rekia Boyd case where you see a prosecutor who perfectly well knows the type of charge that needs to be put before a judge in order for this to go forward. She said so in previous cases herself. Use this defense that was used to let Severin off. So it's like, you know, you can't even fake ignorance. You're just so blatant with your shit. And that's the most infuriating part of the whole thing, and why I feel so strongly about both this issue and for each of these families, is because they are so callous towards these people who don't even, these families, these mothers, these fathers, these sisters, these loved ones, they don't even get the chance to fucking grieve, because they have to immediately hit the ground with put feet on the pavement and money in people's pockets to try and keep just the name, the hint of the name of their loved one alive. There's a woman named Del Matthews in Philadelphia. Her son, Frank McQueen, was killed by police in Chester County, Pennsylvania. And this woman, every Saturday, she goes to the same spot and she has a rally and she talks about her son, because they won't even give her his fucking personal effects that they took off of him after they've killed him. And she was renting a bus to go to Harrisburg to do a big rally. And she got up at a rally at an event we were at, and she said, "I'm begging you. I hear you all are here for so many different people, and y'all went to Baltimore to be there for Freddie Gray and his family, and I think it's wonderful, but I really need people. I rented a bus, and if I have to go to Skid Row to the homeless shelter and pay people to get on that bus with me so that they see that I have people with me, I'll do that." This is the level that these families are put in, to just to get a sliver of not even justice, just information about what happened to their loved ones. And the fact that so many people in this country can't see the humanity in those moments, it breaks my heart. And I don't even know where we go from there, when that's the place we're starting from. It's just impossible.
Yeah, it just feels like public lynchings.
Yep. It completely does.
It's got to be something more lighthearted than that.
Well,
is there a way to segue from?
We can't segue, but also in the news, as we talked about some news in Cleveland and in Philadelphia, here in Southwest Michigan, something important happened. A missing 50-pound pet tortoise was found alive and well in Plainfield Township, Michigan. Frank, a 50-pound pet tortoise, has been found after a two-day search, Rod. His owner, Bradley Clark, tells the Grand Rapids Press that he got a call from someone who said the tortoise was munching on flowers on Tuesday, 7 miles from home in Kent County's Ada Township.
Oh,
the female African tortoise, now you see, they stole that tortoise from somewhere. This is where we get into the problems. Disappeared Sunday from Clark's yard in Plainville Township near Grand Rapids. He believes the 12-year-old tortoise escaped through a damaged part of the fence. He got 100 tips on this missing tortoise.
100 tips?
100 people gave some hints. Two girls found Frank about 100 feet from Clark's home and released the tortoise in a field. He plans to fix the fence. He says the hunt for Frank has been kind of a crazy roller coaster, for the record.
How big? 500 pounds?
He was 500 pounds. No.
How big is
that? He was 50 pounds. I don't want to see a 500-pound tortoise, but that is what amounts to news here in Southwest Michigan.
Pure Michigan.
You put a blonde wig on the tortoise? Is that why they found it so quick?
I bet. You know, once these two little blonde girls got involved, the shit started moving real quickly.
Yeah, you'd think because it was an African turtle, they wouldn't look very hard, right?
I know, you know. He tried to escape 12 years of tortoise. That's all I can say. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so
spectacular.
We make our way to the white woman of the week, Rachel Dolezal. Is that how you say her name? Whatever her name is. Honestly, I can't.
She's just
Dolezal?
Yeah, Dolezal.
Dolezal. There it is. Mm-hmm. This bitch. So... she resigned today. I feel this story, you know what it is about this story that's been getting me? It's so absurd that every time I hear or read something else about it, I think to myself, that can't possibly be true. Every time I read something else. Today it came out that she sued Howard University because they were discriminated against her because she was white.
Right.
She alleged that Smith, who was the dean of students at Howard, and other school officials improperly blocked her appointment to a teaching assistant post, rejected her application for a postgraduate instructorship and denied her scholarship aid while she was a student. The court opinion also noted that Dolezal claimed that the university's decision to remove some of her artwork from a February 2001 student exhibition was, quote, motivated by a discriminatory purpose to favor African-American students over her.
Wow.
Yeah, man. I've seen some of the biggest denial about this. And what, you know, one dude was saying, well, I read the report and I read it as well. And he was like, well, she wasn't saying what race that she was when she was being denied, being passed over for African-Americans. I was like, well, she's saying what race she isn't, which is African-American.
Exactly. That she's claiming she kind of is now.
That's the whole crux of the argument. And then he was like, well, that shouldn't matter. I mean, past fuck up shouldn't affect your track record. I was like, that's what a track record is. Can't count
ridiculous.
Shit.
Just because it doesn't fit your narrative, you can't just be like, nah, let's forget that part. And
you know, finish the report, they dropped the lawsuit because apparently she was African American.
Yeah, well, she's black, so she can't sue them for discriminating against her for being white anymore. But I don't know if that's why they dropped the lawsuit, Drew, but maybe. But the denial in this, though, Rod, has been epic. I mean, I haven't actually, it takes a lot to really like knock me to the point where I was so unsuspecting at the level that the caping on the part of black men was going to be for this woman. It startled me so badly. A black man yesterday told me I sounded like the KKK because I was espousing that I thought it was really wrong that this woman was wearing the costume of a black woman in her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of black dudes have been able to opt out of this because, you know, it's a gender issue in their minds and not really a race issue. And, you know, I have some pretty, I have some thoughts on that shit where I feel like part of it is because this woman sounds like she still covets black men and it sexually and romantically. Mm. And I think black men have a long tradition of opting out and leaving black women on their own when it's like, well, I like Iggy Azalea, for example. How many times were black women just like, yo, I'm disgusted with her caricature of blackface and black voice.
You lost him again. God damn it. Rod, are you still there?
Nope. You know? And then you have guys that are like, yeah, but she got a fat ass. Like they can just opt out because it's just like, well, it's not offensive towards me on a personal level because as far as men are concerned, if we're being sexualized, that's as far as we care about something. So even if that sexualization is coming from a terrible place, right? Like, oh, I like you because you're stereotypical. Like, you're black. I expect you to be a good lover, to have big dick, to have all the stamina and be really macho and really tough. And it's like a bunch of things that, you know, as an individual, I may or may not fit in those boxes, but I'm an individual, right?
Right.
Well, there's a lot of black dudes, I think, that subconsciously don't even get offended or affected when they hear stuff like this because they're like, well, what is she really saying bad about me? Nothing.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess that's what took me by surprise. I just was not expecting. Like, my thing was this. I didn't expect necessarily to have the support. That was not surprising to me because what you're saying, I have seen this in many other instances where issues that affect black women are ignored by black men and men, lots of men in general, period, you know, not just black men. But this was a whole different thing in my experience. And also, I've had so many black women reach out to me and say that they have been having this same surreal experience of not just them not being supported, but actively attacked in support of this woman and her actions. And that's the part that really took me by surprise. I was like, whoa, wait a second. Y'all really try to let her be the victim in this shit. For real.
Me too, man. I'm really surprised. And like, I've been surprised by people that, you know, I respect on some level.
Yep.
In some cases, like, and I'm not saying it like as like, well, nothing they do is good anymore. But like, you know, some of the things like Jelani Kyle wrote a piece today that I read where I was just like, could you not get it any, like, could you, like, how much further could you not get it, you know? Ta-Nehisi Coates is just kind of mused on it,
yep,
at not taking any firm stance, and almost like, I always say that it's one way to insult people without, like, trying to insult them is to withhold empathy. Or you're being academic and analytical when someone's being, like, emotional. And, you know, it's one of the ways, and men do this a lot, but it's one of the ways that you can really alienate that person. And so while they're going, well, I'm insulted, you're going, well, let's take a thought exercise. And what is race anyway? Isn't it really just a social construct? And I mean, what is she really doing to harm? And it's like, well, technically she's imitating, mocking, and replacing black women and speaking as if it's her own experience. That is infuriating.
It should be.
And so when you see these guys tell people, like, calm down, or, it, you know, the attacks on her are worse than what she did, that's when I'm like, do you not want to get it? Or are you just so, your privilege is just so strong you can't possibly understand?
Yeah, and then they've been making all of these, like, ridiculous either-or scenarios, which is what, this is the thing that I've been attacked with most. One of them is, of course, you know, how come it's okay for a man to become a woman, but this is a problem? That's the one I've heard. The other one, which is even more, is just as ridiculous, is, well, at least she's doing something for black people. You know, there's a lot of black people out there that don't do anything. So until you get on them, you shouldn't have anything to say about her.
Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot. I've been seeing a lot of people that are skeptical of everyone but her.
Yeah.
Oh, like, oh, yes. Her parents outed her. What's their motive? Yeah. You know, what does everybody else have against her? That, and it's just like, but we know someone's a liar. Why aren't we skeptical of that person's motivations?
And it just feels like, for me as a black woman, it's so infuriating to know that even if she's pretending to be me, she still gets to rest on her white privilege laurels and become the victim in this. It's like beyond infuriating. It's like, it's such insult to injury. It's like a paper cut and just squeezing lemon juice on it. Cause it's like, wait a second. You start to feel like it's like a gaslighting type of situation where I start to think I'm crazy. Is it me? Am I the only one that's just sitting here like, did this really just fucking happen? Did this bitch really just go around talking about hair typing and refer to her hair type as a certain type of hair? It's not her hair.
And she's making money off of it.
Making a living. I mean, it's ridiculous. I just want to play one real quick clip of her talking about her experience as a black woman.
You talked a lot about having to pick a side. Did that? Did you feel that mostly just kind of a general societal type thing, or like specifically kind of like a, like, I don't know? Talk more about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess I know who I am, and my kids know who I am, and pretty much I don't think anybody else knows. Totally, like, you know, because I think that some people like a certain part of me, and that's who they see me as, period. The artist, the professor, the activist, and a lot of that is also aligned with their perceptions of me as a person, racially. So I think that internally, my main struggle is in how to defend what I want to do and who I am to people. And also, I think that because I am very light-skinned, I think that there's a certain light-skinned privilege that I've noticed with, just, again, in terms of discussing things, but bringing sides together, so that I feel like some white people approach me as a safe person to talk to about, like, maybe they can, like, glean some ideas, like, oh, would this be okay? Even on campus, like, a white professor was asking, like, if we did this it's a certain event, like, would this be okay? Or it's, where is that?
For real. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I just. This is who people are trying to defend. This woman right here. It was nonstop lies from start to finish. The supposition that she was speaking from and everything that came out of her mouth was blatant, pure bullshit. And this is who these dudes are out here ready to go tooth and nail with black women who every day fight for them, whether they want us to fight for them or not. It just is, it's beyond me.
And she went from like considering that like her hair is fake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like she's talking at like it's not a delusion when you know your hair is not real.
Nope.
Like that's the thing. Like so many people gave her a pass because there was this idea like, well, if it's a delusion that she believes in, then it's not really a lie. And I'm like, well, first of all, we have a preponderance of evidence that she does not believe this delusion. Right? That she's actively taking steps to cover up her tracks. But then we also have a bunch of evidence that, you know, she's talking from authority as about an experience she just never had.
Never could have. And she's built an entire career off of this. She's taken space that was intended for a black woman to have to give voice to our experience. And she has taken that away from whatever black women should have been in that spot instead.
And she's done so much harm in so many ways. Like now, you know, not now, but, you know, post Rachel Dolezal, the scrutiny that, you know, light-skinned women are going to receive within the movement, that white activists are going to receive. And she could have, if she truly cared even an iota about black liberation, really, truly, honestly, and sincerely, she would have, should have known better that as a white woman, she can do an awful lot more to motivate and move white people to consciousness and action in spaces that people of color don't have access to. You know what I mean? Like, why fucking, you know, lie, cheat, steal, whatever, your way into a space? And I think, you know, she probably was working within those spaces as a white individual and realized that her access was restricted in some way. There's plenty of, you know, spaces and you know, there's a convening club in Cleveland that I'm not going to go to. There's plenty of opportunities where people are like, you know what, listen, you know, white dude, you're not needed here. Like, all right. Deuces, I'm out. You know, like,
I've talked to people with such an ignorant view on race today. Like one guy was like, well, why, you know, because I said it's a shame she would even feel the need to do this because the black community has a level of inclusion that isn't found in any other community.
Absolutely.
You know, like if you're a white person that cares about black people or loves black culture in any way, people will actually bend over backwards to accept you, you know. Sometimes to our detriment, you know, like I'm not always in support of that shit of people like accepting or giving big ups to white people just for like caring about some black shit or whatever. But it's a fact of life. Like as a black person, I've watched it happen over and over and over again. Right. There's a white person that goes to a black church. All of a sudden it's like, oh, the cool white dude that goes to the black church, play basketball with us. Oh, it's the cool white dude that plays basketball with the black people. Like we love that kind of stuff, right? We love Eminem, we love Tina Marie, like that. That's so for her to feel the need to do this shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what black culture is. Like she should not be an authority on it. You don't trust the culture if you feel like you have to take this extra leap to claim blackness for yourself and as some sort of racial tourist.
Yeah, and to racial me, tourist, it's, it totally. Is, and to me, it's just such a. Evidence that her agenda has nothing to do with the cause itself.
Oh, it's all
because everything she does has been self-serving and about her, centering on her. And that is the complete opposite of what you do when you're in this work. You can't do that. And so that's the part that just gets me, like with this whole like, well, at least she's doing some good. Well, where are her fucking receipts? What good has she done? Tell
me. What else I noticed? A lot of people are saying stuff like, well, why would you want to be black? I mean, obviously, she must be doing it for a good reason. Because being black is fucking cool, for one.
Hello?
And attention is attention wherever you get it. If you're not getting it because you're not the special snowflake white person, then you go, I'll get it as the special snowflake black person in Spokane.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, you know, who knows what her motivations necessarily are. What we do know is that she's lying. And that is enough for me. Like once you start with the idea of like, especially if she faked those alleged hate crimes,
Absolutely.
Oh, then God.
That right there infuriates me to no end, and I will never give her a benefit of the doubt because Agreed. That does so much harm
and, no,
to
and,
so
and,
many people.
So many people, and you hear, I've had the same argument, like, she fake hate crimes. Well, I'm not agreeing with the way she went about it. Then you should stop right fucking there. Why is anything else coming out your mouth?
And I think that, you know, again, back to the, you know, fuck the intent. What was the outcome?
Right.
The intent is irrelevant. Who cares what she intended? What was the outcome? I think the outcome is she did a lot of harm. In a lot of ways. And I think that's
unforgivable. Think about how many times people are, you know, activists are disregarded because they're like, well, I got threatened and I got this and I got that. People are like, whatever, you know, you just, it's just somebody in the comment section or something, or you're making it up, nothing happened. Now you have someone lending credence to that.
Yeah.
Complete credence. And just... again, unnecessary, because honestly there's nothing that she has done in her career that she couldn't have done as a white person. Not a single thing.
Exactly.
Every accolade she received, every study she decided to do, even her position as the president of the Spokane NAACP chapter, she could have done as a white person. I'm not saying it wouldn't have been a little bit harder, because it is you do have to come into a space and gain a level of acceptance that maybe you would automatically get as a black person. But if you really believe in this cause and you really want to help black people, that's work that you would want to do, because that's the work we need people to be doing. And so it doesn't even make no fucking sense.
And ultimately, it was her deception that cost her that position.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, which is so amazing to me, because I've seen people act like, well, the black community is hurting itself by, like, first of all, someone will take her spot in a second, it'll be fine. You won't even know the difference. So when's the last time you've been like, man, I'm going to tell you who's doing some good work?
Spokane.
Spokane.
LACP. Remember how they squashed that Spokane uprising or whatever the fuck? Like, no. That, like, so the real idea here is the mentality of the people who are calling her out is wrong. That's the only message people want to get across, is you should never ever call out this precious white snowflake, or she might stop caring about us. And isn't that the real tragedy?
Oh, yeah. And a dude made an argument to me the other day, another podcaster actually, that you know, she got her job honestly because clearly no other black woman was more qualified than her for the job.
And I said, yeah, please.
Sorry.
Exactly. Because for real, I literally was like, I'm in like the Twilight Zone right now. What you're trying to tell me is that in a job that was for a black woman, that she was the best black woman for the job. That's exactly what you're trying to convince me, a black woman, of. That this white woman was the best black woman for the job.
That was the tweet of the year. I didn't see it. Or I forget who did it. But only a white person can get this much attention for being black.
Honestly.
Wow.
Whew. Well, let's turn to a little bit lighter side to this whole debacle. And, of course, as the internets are wont, they got a lot of some funny things off. Ask Rachel was very good hashtag. But I ran across this quiz. Are you blacker than a Rachel Dolezal? So we'll have you take the quiz, Rod, and we'll see how you do.
Have you taken it yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, here we go. Question number one. When was Craig fired? The options are Monday, his day off, April 26th, or Friday.
On his day off.
All right. Let's see. Number two.
Was still in boxes, but he said he wasn't still in boxes. They ain't got it on camera.
Got it. Day two. Who took over for the 99 in 2000? Your options are Murder, Inc., Bad Boy, Cash Money, and No Limit.
Cash money.
All right. What type of precipitation couldn't Missy Elliott stand? The hail?
The rain.
The rain. All right. Dang. What color should potato salad be? Yellow or white?
Is there other options?
Just those two. Yellow or white. Yellow or white.
Yellow.
Okay. Fill in the blank. Me and you, your mama and your
cousin too.
Fill in the blank. Fish don't fry in the blank. Beans don't burn on the blank.
Kitchen and grill.
All right. Who did Erica Badu call on? Anthony, Dante, Tyrone, or Sean?
Tyrone.
All right. Number 8. Birthday was the blank days. Now we sip blank.
Champagne when we thirsty. Right. Birthdays was the worst day. Now we sip champagne when we thirsty.
All right.
Damn right, like the life I live, because that's good, positive, and it's all
good. Number 9, Mary J. Blige doesn't need any hateration or holleration in this
dancery.
And number 10, when your child asks for McDonald's, your response is 3 options here: sure, what Happy Meal do you want, and you got McDonald's money?
Yeah, that's it. See.
All right, let's see. Calculate it up. Oh, shit.
Oh.
You got Samuel L. Jackson. Okay. You're black as hell. We believe you, Ron.
Oh, shit. That's not the best part about that quiz.
The best part of that quiz is that my lovely husband took this quiz earlier, and he got Drake.
Says
you've got a non-fat black card. You know a few things that would make you to the top 3 of trivia night, and that's good enough.
That's not the funny thing. I mean, I think I'm not surprised that I'm like Drake level. I think what's funnier is so are you.
I got Drake level too. I don't know what I got wrong. I thought I answered every question the same way you did.
How is fat spelled?
How is what?
Non-fat
is that?
Oh, man, I thought it would be P-H-A-T.
P-H-A-T would have been good, right?
Been better.
Yeah, I think I got the potato salad question wrong. Because I don't eat potato salad, so.
No, white people like the white potato salad.
I don't eat potato salad.
Your family brings the yellow salad.
I don't think I've ever seen a white potato salad.
Oh, we'd be putting red potatoes. You usually make a red potato white potato salad with red potatoes, and people get weird and shit, like peas and something. I don't know.
Mm. So it's like y'all take potatoes and lettuce and make a real salad.
Kind of close to that.
Put some dressing on it.
Pretty close.
White people food is terrible.
Pretty close.
Facts.
It's that time. Yes, all cops. So, did you hear about this dude in Georgia that opened fire on a bunch of cops, begged to be killed, and got shot in the shoulder? Only a white dude.
Yeah, guess the race, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
For real, dude. He like literally was opening fire, begging to be killed, and still miraculously got shot in the shoulder. So 21-year-old Leighton Marchetta was intoxicated.
Leighton, for real? That's Leighton. His fucking name. Yeah.
It's like leave.
That's his last name?
I just lost my spot. Marchetta.
Oh, so like cheese. Yeah, it does make sense.
Yep.
A little bit. They say he was intoxicated. He drove to the state police post. He drove to the police, first of all. He went to their post.
Drunk.
Yeah, by 8 in the morning. And fired at 2 troopers with a high-powered hunting rifle capable of penetrating a bulletproof vest. Didn't just shoot at him. He shot him with some weaponry.
This shit happened at 8 in the morning? That's another guess the race moment right there, too.
Yeah, he did at first. He woke up bright and early. Set his alarm.
No, he was still drinking. He was intoxicated. He didn't stop. He drunk all night long. Was like, fuck it. I'm going to drive to the police station, pop off a couple shots, scream, you guys are going to have to kill me. But he charged towards the troopers, fired at him. You're going to have to kill him. Charged at him, and they took cover, fired 2 shots, wounding him in the shoulder. Got a shoulder shot with the white dude.
Meanwhile, 2 unarmed black people had 137 shots fired into their vehicle while they were sitting in it, including one Rambo style on the top of the hood.
Yeah. Or barrel rolled into frame with a holstered weapon at a kid's pool party.
What if white people are just incredibly lucky?
The incredible white man's real. Holy shit.
They must be. Here you go.
They be making movies about us because there's some truth to it, Rob. You're onto a conspiracy theory, my
friend. It's like y'all's race just turns everybody shooting at you into Cobra from G.I. Joe.
Totally.
Nothing hits them. Teflon.
I have to be honest. I'm just this very white guy. I'm like Cat with like 32 lives.
I'm real reckless
with my shit, dude.
Drew has broken his back in several places skiing, hit a tree. Drew had a house fall on his face, and he lived to tell the tale.
Broke my jaw.
This is the kind of shit that happens to him. I don't even like going outside when it's raining for fear of something happening to me.
Yeah, that's pretty bad, man. I mean, that to me, that's bad luck, not good luck.
He lived to tell the tale, though.
Right, yeah. All that shit happening to you, though? Like, I would rather live a less interesting life.
I suppose. Well, so we're talking about Yes All Cops, but really this is, I would say, a special edition of, where's my kids?
So very white. Seriously, the whitest.
So this is our new segment. How white are you? Very white.
So very white.
So very white.
So very white.
This is an audio clip. These are open carry activists. And we all know that is code word for white.
Yes.
Because there is no open carry for black people.
Nope.
Open carry activists confronting a police officer. And we'll just let him listen to his conversation.
In Abilene, Texas.
Oh, come on. Video. It's going to make me refresh the page so I can play a fucking ad. I swear to God. I had it queued up, right? And then you want to play it. And it's like, no, we're going to make you do this again. So there's going to be an ad coming up.
Whoa, what are y'all doing?
That's him yelling.
What are you doing, man? What the hell? We're not breaking any laws. Calm down, both of you. Calm down.
Tell the cops to calm down.
Hey, can you tell your man to stop getting at the ready and threatening me? Tell your man to stand down.
Yo.
He's over there with an AR-15 in his hands. He's telling me to drop my guns right now.
He's telling me to drop my guns right now. Stand down.
So this dude just told these cops to go fuck themselves. He got a gun out and they're like, drop your weapon. He's like, fuck you. Keep playing this, Drew. This is some miraculous ass shit. I hadn't heard this yet. Go ahead.
Look at him. He's at the ready. He's got his hands on the pistol grip and everything. I've got my gun behind me, and you guys are over here with your hands on your rifles like I'm a threat. So calm down. No, listen. I am not talking to you until these guys stop at the ready. All right, I'm not talking to you. Until these two guys right here... Until you guys... No, I want your hand off the rifle before I get comfortable.
Yo!
Even his friend, there's a dude with him. So the guy that's filming is the one talking. There's another open carry... I'm putting air quotes. And I can't remember the activist. Open carry asshole. This dude, the other white dude's got his hands up like, oh my God, what's going on? Like, even he's a little bit scared.
This is crazy.
He's just angry.
Then you can't talk to me. See you later. I can be wherever the hell I want. This is public property. This is public right here. I am on a public sidewalk.
He's not.
Oh, there you go. Now he's on a public sidewalk.
Okay, so you were on the property, correct?
No.
Yes, he was. I was. Okay, so I need your names because you're criminally trespassing.
No, we're not. You can't criminally trespass unless you're told to leave somewhere. And you've been given notice. Where's the notice? They didn't advise me of shit. Now, where's the notice that I'm criminally trespassing?
Oh, my God.
We're on a sidewalk right now. Okay, we just heard that. So here's what I'm going to do. Here's what we're going to do. I am going to go to my vehicle, and I am going to leave. And I'm going to go down the road to public property.
But, hear me out. Since you were on the property at one point with your rifle, they don't want you on the property anymore.
Okay, that's the first notice I've gotten.
And that's the warning you're being given.
Okay, but do you have to give me warning with a fucking AR-15 in your hands?
Yo.
On my back.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's a safety thing.
How is it a safety thing? I'm a law-abiding citizen, minding my own business.
You haven't done anything wrong.
Exactly. So why do we have a guy over here hiding behind a wall as if I'm about to shoot somebody?
Look what's going around all over the world.
Don't give me that crap. You know for a fact.
It actually just goes on for another like 2.5 minutes.
Oh, my God. Roger, can you believe this shit?
Kind of. I mean, obviously, it's shocking. I mean, don't get me wrong. But I feel like... the disparity between the way white people can get away with shit with the cops and the way we can't is just, I don't even know if I have surprise left in me anymore. You know what I mean?
No, that's true. I hadn't heard this video specifically. That dude literally was like, told that cop to calm the fuck down. Said he wasn't going to talk to him. That little girl in McKinney, Texas. This is the same fucking state, mind you. This happened to Abilene. So the same state got knocked to the ground and dragged by her braids because as the cop said himself, she was running her mouth.
Yeah, I can't even like watch videos like that because I get so upset with like just the way that those people are treated like humans and black people are just treated like chattel.
That was the most startling thing. Well, there was lots of startling things about that McKinney video, but to hear the cop talk to code switch in the middle of the video, he's talking like a total asshole to these black kids, and then code switch when the white kids walk up to him. Right. In mid fucking sentence, he does it. That's how ingrained this racism is in our society. It's that he didn't even think about it. Oh, black, bad, white, good. Okay. Just like that. It's crazy. I hadn't heard that video. Drew, that's crazy. Where do you find this shit at?
You know, that is definitely some crazy. Speaking of more crazy shit, white dude, another, of course, obviously, there's no guess race in this. Gene Cooley, 50, complained that he was harassed for walking through the Atlanta Hartsfield Airport with a loaded AR-15 and a 100-round drum magazine in the airport.
They make me take my shoes off in the airport. They be going through black women's weaves at the airport. This dude's walking around with an AR-15 and a 100-round drum magazine?
Yep.
Oh, you know, shit.
I always carry the firearm for safety, he said. And even though it's a right and that we can carry it, I don't use the excuse that it's my right. I carry it for safety because you never know what can happen when you're out. And you might need an AR-15 with a 100-round drum magazine. Like, if you can see the clip on this thing, it looks like a fucking Tommy gun. Like, you know what 100 rounds looks like? It's in like a drum, like a big barrel. This is ridiculous. It's crazy that you could walk around in a fucking airport with that. A white person can, forgive me.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned airport security, Andrew.
Oh, you're going to make... I see, Rod said this kind of stuff's triggering. I don't want to trigger Rod. I don't want him to have to hear...
Nah, fuck that. Nah. We telling this goddamn story right now. So... Yeah,
we got to get Ty on the show at one
Yeah, we
point.
Do have to get this black gentleman that Drew used to work with. They're on a business trip. They're going to California to some conference or some bullshit. And due to the negligence of the staff there...
Some ineptitude.
Yes.
We missed a connection.
Connection was missed, and then the last bus to take them to, like, where they could have just taken a bus or something leaves.
It was pretty, you know, I'm not, like, making excuses. I was a total asshole. Mm. I, like, total, like, dickbag. But they missed our flights. We had to get a bus from, like, I think it was, like, San Francisco.
Stop right there
to
for
San
a second.
Jose.
Rod, let me tell you. Everything Drew's about to tell you is not going to convince you that he had any right.
No, I know right. I said I was an asshole. I'm still not trying to, like, preface the...
You sound like you're making your case, though, so I'm just prefacing it.
Maybe there might be somebody listening that's like, I can understand a little bit. Maybe... Rod, I don't know. I'm just going to say they missed the flight, missed the connection. There's a shuttle van service that you can take, and it's, like, you know, 3 hours rather than, like, 45-minute flight, but whatever. The flight that we missed was the last one for the day. So the geniuses at the airport thought, well, we'll just put your bags on the next flight to this destination, which is tomorrow morning at like 6 in the morning or something. So I'm like, well, I want my bag now. I'm going to take the shuttle bus. Okay, well, we can't really find your bag. And my man Ty, he's like, you know, carried on. I didn't check a bag at all. I just like put my shit overhead. Like he's ready to go. But I, you know, for whatever reason, I had to check the bag. So I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And there, I think there was two buses and one went by and I'm getting like more and more agitated. I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm swearing like, you know, my bag, I just want to get out of here. It's ridiculous. And it's now going on like an hour and a half and they can't find my bag. And maybe it was on purpose because I was being a dick. I don't know. But here comes, I can see it like, you know, shuttle bus to San Jose, like coming down the like airport, whatever. And I'm like, great, great. There goes the last fucking bus.
Okay, stop there because I'll take over.
I'm really going
to
take over.
I'm only taking over because Ty called me to tell me what happened next. My husband started a slow clap in the middle of the goddamn airport, Roderick. Congratulations, he says to the staff at the airport. While slow clapping loudly, that's the last fucking bus. And now we're stuck here all night. Great job.
That's about right.
Yes.
That's accurate. Not my proudest. This is like, you know.
It was a while ago.
It was a long time.
Long time ago. But the best part is his companion, a large black gentleman. Shout out to you, Ty. He calls me and says, Leslie, I have never seen any shit like this in my entire life. If it had been me, I would have been on the ground in handcuffs seconds after Drew started talking. He said, I was standing there like, Drew, I'm black. What are you doing? You know, if something goes down, I'm going to be the one that gets arrested, despite your fucking bullshit ass low clap over here.
You said that when we got pulled over and I got shitty.
I said that shit to you then too.
But I get pulled over. I don't know why I'm pulled over. And I get like, kind of like right off the bat, like indignant, like, what's the problem, officer? Like, kind of like mad. And he says something like, you know, is this your vehicle? I'm like, of course it's my car. What kind of question is that? Like, I really like, it was a very inappropriate exchange on my part. And it turns out that I had some sort of like thing covering the license plate. And I guess if it wasn't my car, I was supposed to tell whose car it was. But I really was like, kind of indignant. And Leslie's like,
not kind of. You do this every time a cop pulls you over. You act like this. You can't imagine why they're even in your face, and how dare they even talk to you.
A little bit.
It's a white thing. I don't understand it, because I don't have that privilege, but it is something to behold. I'll tell you that much. I can't even relate. It's crazy, Roderick, to sit and watch it. It's like, and you're not like this in any other circumstance, but with police, you immediately are like, man, fuck you.
There's a little bit of contempt.
Immediately, you're like, yeah, fuck you, dude. I don't want to hear what you got to say.
You know, you all were talking about, you know, cops, and I forget before where I was talking about, you know, if you file a complaint. I went in and was going to file a complaint about an officer, and the dude behind the desk, like, listen, you know. Andy, like little Andy. This is a small town. You know, you can do that if you want, but it's not going to turn out well for you. They're going to start pulling you over all the time. They can find a reason to pull you over. They're going to just, you know, they'll know that you're the person that filed the complaint. It won't be, you're not like, well, he's just telling me this. Like the welcome to the police station desk. Like, I could fill it out, but here's what's going to happen.
Anyways, that's some white shit right there for sure.
Shitty with cops, yeah.
Getting shitty with cops and slow clapping at the airport. Y'all crazy.
Yeah, white people's cop stories are so fucking different than black people's.
So different.
Cop stories, man. I remember I was at my brother's wedding, and his friends start. He had some white friends that were in the wedding, and they started telling us about running with the cops, and they got drunk, and they wanted more beer. So they drunk drove to the gas station. And the cops were there at the gas station. And they came, you know, got out the car all drunk and got in, bought the beer, and they were doing fine. Then they drove out of the parking lot, and, you know, apparently they were, you know, weaving and bobbing or whatever. And they like hit somebody, like rear ended them. And so before the cops could come, they all jumped out of the car and left the car and ran off. And I was just like, how the fuck is that? Wow. Y'all should be dead. You know? For real. Like, if there's any justice in the world, you guys should all be dead. You know, not that I'm wishing it on you, but goddamn, that would never happen to me.
Nope. Never, never. It's just like, for,
you know what's funny? They were talking about it almost like, because one of them did get stuck with it. He wasn't even driving, and he's the one who got stuck with the ticket. And he was just like, oh, man, you guys got me good, man. And I was like, what?
Damn. It's like Chief Justice, what's his name? I can't remember his name right now. But anyways, but he says he's never, ever in his entire life been pulled over. The Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice Roberts says that he has never in his entire life been pulled over. I'm like, wow, that's like, that is when you know you're living in a different, that there are two worlds that people reside in. Never, not once,
white people.
Moving on to some black shit. Apparently Lionel Richie is telling all, coming out talking about all his sexcapades while he was with the Commodores. He says to British GQ that when the touring with the Commodores started, we knew we were going to do 100 shows in as many cities, maybe more in a year. So we decided we're going to make love to every girl in the world. That was our mission statement. When asked if he kept score, he says, no, no, no. I mean, we all kept score. Yeah, we were college guys, so we liked stats. And when you start out, it's madness. There's one in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. It's great. You're killing it. But all of a sudden you get to the fifth show and you're like, everybody get out of my room. You can't do it. I don't care whether you're 19 and sexually possessed. You can't do that. and put on high-heeled boots and run across the stage every night. That's why drugs became so inviting, because you get a hit of this and it gives you the stamina. But how long does it last? And then you're in rehab. And what kind of bullshit is that? Or you're falling down on stage and passing out halfway through the show.
Wow.
Lionel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. On getting pleasure from stories of how he helped other people get laid. You know something? I get more compliments from men than women. Guys use one word, he says. Thanks. The greatest times of my life, Lionel. You were right there, baby. Or, hey, Lionel, I've made love to you many times. And I'm like, that's a lie. I've never touched your ass in my life. It's the simplicity of the songs, I think, that works. A guy once came up to me and said, hey, you wrote We Are the World. You should have called it I Populated the World. Ha 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 ha. All right, Lionel, go ahead. The thing about Lionel Richie that always got me is that even as unattractive as he was the best looking person in the Commodore still.
Mm-hmm.
They were not a very attractive band at all.
Three a day, though?
Hey.
Three a day.
One in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening.
I'm just thinking, like, in my youth, my own self, three times a day is a lot. That's
especially when you got a busy schedule like they had.
Seriously? Yeah. They had albums they was recording. He was writing hits for other people. I mean, hey, guess he was getting it in, too. More power to you. Right on, Lionel.
I wonder if he has, like, syphilis or some shit.
He might have at least that HPV thing, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Rug burns.
Rug burns.
Do you see this article, 19 Ways Americans don't realize life here isn't normal? Have you seen this, Rod?
No.
I'm not going to be all 19 because some of them are stupid, but Latvia's got faster internet than we do in America. Latvia. I think worldwide we're not even in the top, like, 20 or 30.
Yeah, we are so technologically behind, man. We travel sometimes and I'm like, damn, what the fuck is going on? We're supposed to be the best. That's why I know shit is a lie.
Diabetes is three times more prevalent in the U.S. than in the U.K. Three times.
Mm. I definitely know that.
I know that, but they have shitty food over there, so that's easy to know.
They're funny. I used to play like Call of Duty online. At one time, I played with these kids from the U.K., and they were just talking shit about this country sounding white dude from the U.S. And they had the funniest jokes, man. Those kids had me dying. And they were just like, oh, I'm American. I'm going to eat a hamburger. And it's like, I'm going to get extra cheese. You know, like, they were just making all these jokes. And I was like, oh, my God, we are so fat.
Yes. So
well, that's actually one of the numbers. American kids are getting plenty of exercise relative to other countries, yet they're the most obese.
Hmm.
American children aged 11 to 15 years do moderate to vigorous physical activity in the past week. 26.8%. It's the third highest among the nations profiled, yet 30% are overweight or obese, and that's dead last. So despite being number three in moderate to vigorous exercise, we're the most obese.
Hmm.
The British have better teeth. I don't know what the word better.
What does better mean?
So the fact, a recent study found that the British have the best teeth of all the nations surveyed. The average number of missing, decayed, or filled teeth in a 12-year-old Britain is 0.7. America's 1.3. The worst is Poland, 3.8.
That's interesting. Actually, that doesn't surprise me because Brits don't like go through so much like cosmetic and like orthodontia work, which often causes people to have later surgeries and lose teeth because, you know, you're making your mouth do shit it's not wanting to do. So
that is true.
That makes sense.
A little bit of sense. Let's see some other ones. In America, 84% of households have a washing machine and 80% have dryers. In China, 80% of households have washing machines and only 10% have dryers. They don't have dryers. Actually, I knew that fact because they didn't have them in Argentina either.
They didn't. They have this weird thing called an estufa that was like a jet engine in your house that you put shit in and it like was a centrifuge and it sort of got things dry.
No, it was called the Kohinoor.
Well, whatever it was. It sort of got things dry and then you had to hang them up after that.
You ever go, Rod, you ever go into like a fancy, like, I don't know, fancy, but like a spa or like some men's room that's got like a, you get a massage and there's a communal area where you can get into like a whirlpool or whatever, and then the places where you shower and shit, they have this little thing you put your swimsuit in and it spins at like 8,000 RPMs and dries it. Have you ever seen one of those?
Absolutely not.
Maybe if only seen. Anyway, they have like an industrial version of that in Argentina. Yeah. You put your clothes in it and you lock it down and you press a button and it like starts fucking shaking and vibrating and then it spins at like an ungodly RPM and it all the water shoots out of it. It's pretty sweet. Let's see here. Everyone, we all knew this. American car chase more of its citizens than Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Switzerland combined times two.
Duh.
Bacon obsession? It's not just us. Think of China. Between 1975 and 2013, Chinese pork consumption grew on average of 5.7% per year, whereas U.S. consumption only 1.3%. Mm. And now the Chinese eat six times as much pork as the U.S., 54 million tons a year compared to 8.6 million in the U.S., but they're much bigger.
They ran out of chickens.
Ran out of chickens had to eat pork. And this I kind of knew too. 40% of Americans believe in creationism. What do you guys think the worldwide number is?
18.
Pretty close. 28. I guess that's a few more. I don't know. I guess it's meant to mean that American life is not normal, but I mean, of course it's not. That's a stupid fucking...
No, that's just our xenophobic bullshit ass. We're the center of the universe.
You see, speaking of center of the universe, see Malcolm Gladwell going after... people donating money to Harvard.
Malcolm Gladwell got them tweets off, though.
Yeah, he sure did, dude. So he said, it came down to helping the poor, giving the world's richest university $400 million it doesn't need. Wise choice, John. So John Paulson gave $400 million to Harvard for their engineering school. And who's Paulson? He's a billionaire. He's one of these hedge fund guys. Makes money by making money.
Makes money by making other people money.
Yeah. So Gladwell had it. I'll just read his tweets in succession. Next up for Paulson, volunteering at the Hermes store on Madison Avenue. Let's make this a world-class retail outlet, guys. Next up for Paulson, volunteering, working the coat check at Art Base. They're short-staffed. Billionaires don't step up. Harvard will soon be down to its last $30 billion. Apparently, $200 million is an earmarked for a satellite campus on St. Bart's. It's going to be named John Paulson School of Financial Engineering. Harvard's pitch to Paulson, not all privileged people are equally privileged. Paulson to Harvard, is there a way to give back without actually giving anything back?
Hmm. All right, Malcolm. Get him.
Yeah.
Hello? Yep. Well, did he come back?
No, we didn't lose you. I was just reading Malcolm Gladwell going off on billionaire hedge fund douchebags giving $200 million to Harvard.
I think it was $400
million. Oh, $400, forgive me. Because Harvard doesn't need it at $36.4 billion endowment.
They definitely do not need it.
It's $400 million. Could have done a lot with that. Look at...
Yeah, Akon. Yeah, he has given light to Africa. You know what's been getting me about this Akon story? I think it's wonderful and everybody should be covering it and stuff, but what the fuck were the rest of these charities doing in Africa this whole time? If Akon's able to roll in with his make an entire energy company and give light in the next 10 years to 600,000 people, what the fuck would they been doing over there? It's confusing to me.
Yeah, I don't even know like what's going on in Africa. To be honest, just the fact that it's Africa, like it's one place. You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yes.
And, like. That's just how ignorant as an American I am, where I'm just like, oh, he's helping Africa, you know, which is like, you know, I don't know specifically where or anything.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because he's doing it through mostly solar energy technology. And it's just a neat thing that he's put together. And he's supposed to be going through mostly the Senegalese area, 600 million Africans that he is looking to provide light and electricity for that have never had electricity run to the remote areas that they live. It's pretty fucking awesome. But I really do want to know what the hell the rest of these charities have been doing in Africa, all of the African countries that they have been allegedly doing charity work in. So I have another quiz for you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
This one is called Who Said It? Vladimir Putin or Kanye West? You ready?
Okay.
All right, here we go. Sometimes it's necessary to be lonely in order to prove that you're right.
That's Kanye.
Who is it? Kanye or Putin?
I want to say Putin.
Let's see. I think it gives us the answer at the end. Okay. Number two, on the size of his salary... Frankly, I don't know. They bring it and I send it to my account without counting it. Putin or Kanye?
I'm going to go Putin on that one.
I'll go Putin too.
Putin. Drew, you're not taking this quiz.
I can't take my...
I have a feeling that I'll get everything I want.
This is a beard cuckolding. I just want to point this out. I've been beard cuckolded right
Putin
now.
Putin or West?
I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
That's what I was asking before we started recording. I'm like, did you see him? What does his beard look like? Is his beard bigger than mine? Is it bushier?
His beard is on fleek. That's what it is. So I have a feeling that I'll get everything I want. Putin or Kanye?
I'll say Putin.
Kanye.
Visiting my mind is like visiting the Hermes factory.
Kanye.
That's totally Kanye. Mm-hmm.
I'm going down as a legend, whether you like me or not.
Kanye.
Yep.
When someone says something like, I'm a god, everyone says, who does he think he is? I just told you who I thought I was, a god.
Kanye.
Yeah, it sounds like Kanye for sure.
If you press the spring too hard, it will snap back. You must always remember this.
Oh, that's Putin.
Yeah.
He's talking about like the Ukraine or something.
Everything I'm not made me everything I am. In my opinion, that's a prophetic statement. Gandhi would have said something like that.
That's got Kanye written out. He's quoting Gandhi. Gandhi would have been quoting me.
For me to say I wasn't a genius, I would just be lying to you and to myself.
That's Kanye. Just stop. That's Kanye.
Kanye.
I'm like a vessel, and God has chosen me to be the voice and the connector.
Kanye.
That sounds like Putin.
When asked about his biggest regret, quote, I will be quite frank with you. I cannot recollect anything of the kind. Evidently, God built my life so that I would have nothing to regret.
I'll go with Kanye.
I'm going to go Putin.
How could you be me and want to be someone else?
I'll go Putin on that one.
Really? That guy sounds Kanye.
Oh, that was Kanye, that one.
Oh, okay. Wait, so I've been right about the other ones?
You were... Oh, wait, hold on. I should have told you that, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's how quiz goes.
Sorry. You were right about all of them with the exception of that one. And when asked about his biggest regret, that one was Putin.
Okay.
I have a private life in which I do not permit interference. It must be respected. Yep. I am so credible and so influential and so relevant that I will change things.
Kanye.
Yep. You can't look at a glass half full or empty if it's overflowing.
Kanye.
I'm gonna go Putin.
That was Kanye. And the last one. Sometimes it's better to act faster doing mistakes than do nothing at all.
Kanye.
Putin.
That was Putin.
They're like all Kanye. There's only like 4 Putin quotes in there.
Yeah, you got 13 out of 16. That was really good.
Not bad.
You got it down. They do sound eerily alike, though.
Kanye and Putin.
Kanye and a dictator from Russia.
Well, there was a distinct difference in that Kanye was talking about I am God, whereas Putin was talking about God anointed me in my life.
Yeah.
Like Putin spoke of God in a much more like he's real and he's anointed me, whereas Kanye was more like I am God.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I feel like Kanye had a couple quotes about, you know, God blessing him and shit too, and being a communicator between God and because he's actually a religious dude, which surprised me because he brought it up one time when he was just like, you know, all these people hate on me, but I'm just a Christian God-fearing man. I was like, what? I didn't know that. And I'm like, I guess he does believe that. I didn't, you know.
I guess. Teach his own.
His mind's definitely different. He like sees colors when he hears music and shit. Like,
he's definitely different.
I don't know what that means, but
I'm firmly in the camp of believing that he's a genius. Like,
There's no, yeah. There is absolutely zero doubt on that. And that's usually what comes with genius. I mean,
yeah, that's
you see it in so many areas. I mean, I was just watching a clip of that new movie about Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, with John Cusack in it, and it reminded me of the same thing where it's like, yeah, you're so you're on a whole other level of genius that you're, the rest of your shit don't actually work like the rest of us. And that's why sometimes you say crazy shit and we just are like, oh, well, Kanye shrug. What you gonna do?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of supporting like black eccentric people, because I feel like society way too often puts them in this box of like, oh, you're too uppity, or you're egomaniac, or you're crazy, or whereas, you know, with white people, it's more like, well, that person's a genius. You just need to understand. But with, you know, especially black music, a lot of times it's very like, we don't respect it. So you're just an asshole. You're not, you know, we're going to skip the part about you being a genius. So a lot of times I end up like really wanting to sit back and point out the fact that, hey, this guy is a genius as well as an asshole. Okay.
And you can be both. It's not a binary situation there. Plenty of talented people are assholes. We could go back in history and look at all of them. I actually was reading an article the other day about that. The issue with the perceived whiteness of being an alternative black girl. They use Willow Smith as kind of a starting point for the conversation, but it really reminded me of what you were just talking about, where, you know, we're not even given that space to be whoever it is that we want to be often as black people. To me, part of the Black Lives Matter movement is this idea that we're not going to let you define us any longer, because we don't need you to. We're going to be ourselves. And I was talking to Netta the other day about this, and she was saying that, you know, yep, I'm going to get whatever tweets off I want to tweet. Not every tweet's going to be about social justice, but that's part of my, you know, loving myself as well. Because I'm still a girl. I'm still a person, and I get to do what the fuck I want to do.
Yeah, I was really shocked that she followed me on Twitter. And then she came on and did them Thrones with us. And I was just kind of like, you know, the whole time kind of like, oh, yeah, that's right. You forget that her life's not that Time magazine profile. Like, she's still a human being every other day, you know, every day of the week.
And I think especially with somebody like Netta, I always think about her, because for real, the person she was on August 8th and the person that she became after August 9th, this was a catalyst for her life. And so if you could go back on her Twitter feed right now and see the stuff, she was just a regular carefree girl, just like every other person that loses somebody in their lives in these horrible ways, whether it's an encounter with police or due to gun violence. You know, they're all regular people. And it's these circumstances that we are put in that make extraordinary things happen in our lives. And so
you do need to fight to reclaim that space, because part of the thing about our show that, you know, I think is simplicity, but at the same time I really fight for it hard, is that we are just regular normal people having regular normal conversations. And that, you know, it's become a thing that I'm really fiercely protective of, that we do have a community and we do have a space where you can say anything and we can make jokes about anything and we can talk about any topic, because it's important that we're not just looking at it as a completely professional setting, you know, where we have to be right all the time and no one can have a view that we disagree with, or, you know, like, we really do need to make it you know, and we have to keep it, we want to have a funny place and an authentic place.
Well, I can tell you that for me personally, doing this work full time, it's an oasis for me. That's why when I sat up, you know, such an avid listener, because it's the thing that keeps me like, okay, I can think about normal things and I can go into the chat room and it feels like, a, you know, the student center in the Black House at college, where I'm saying hi to the same people I get to see, and we're talking about dumb shit like the weather and people's animals and just, you know, whatever is going on in our lives as people, not in the grand scheme of a statement that we're trying to make or a point that we have to get across. And so for me, it's been, you know, just a really big oasis for me. And so I thank you and I thank Karen for that. And I know a lot of other people feel the same way. So.
Oh, for sure, man. I think it's important. You know, like, sometimes I tell, like, me and Karen, we'll talk about the show and stuff, and I'll be like, we're trivial, but in a way, that's the most important thing we can be, you know? Cause just every day can't be the fight for everybody all the time just cause you're black. Like you'll go crazy. You Absolutely. Know, like you need a reprieve. Like you need to be able to like as irreverent as it is, like Guess the Race is cool to me because we're all kind of laughing at the silliness of the construct of race, you know? And that's important because if not, it's just depressing. Like yes. You know what I mean? Like reading about a heinous crime and going, I really hope that wasn't a black guy. There's actually nothing really fun about that, but you can kind of spin it to be like, oh yeah, we kind of all do this.
Yes, we do. We have that moment where we're like, ooh, I hope that's a white dude. Please.
I do that all the time. Like, oh my God, please, gotta be a white dude. I hope it's a white dude. Oh, thank God it's a creepy white dude.
That's true. So, TV and movies, we spend a little bit of time at the end of the show talking about that. And I know I saw you Facebook and or tweet, I don't know which, about Sense8. Have you watched the whole season? Are you in the midst of it?
I'm done now.
Me too. What did you think of it?
Oh yeah, great. 5 out of 5. The Wachowskis really found the medium that they have been looking for their entire careers.
Absolutely. It's so beautiful, right?
Yeah, I think it's the best thing they've ever done, man. And I say that even in light of The Matrix.
Like, absolutely. I completely agree. It's
better than that.
The visually, it was so stunning. It was so smart storytelling devices that they used and the way they were able to interweave the characters with each other. I just thought it was so great and it was funny. And it was, I mean, I was telling Drew, he hasn't watched it, but I was telling him that there's a running joke about Jean-Claude Van Damme in this series. And like just that fact alone is hilarious. I get to hear a dude go, Van Damme always comes back. Like that's fucking hilarious.
And Conan, there's Conan jokes. Yep. And also, man, like it is one of those series where like you will laugh, you will cry, you will be angry, you will be scared. They knocked it out of the park. I cannot be more impressed with this series, man.
I couldn't either. And it was so like gender positive, sexuality positive, race positive. It was so much about the characters. None of the characters were defined by anything so trivial as those things. They really were individuals, and I loved all of that. Like the whole thing with the actor and that whole storyline was so beautiful and something you don't see. You never see anything like that. I just really, really enjoyed it.
They filmed certain things, like when they had the scene where it kind of turns into like a mental orgy.
Yes.
That scene is so cool. The scene where they all relive their births. Oh. Like, it's so powerful and it's so cool. And then the way it's shot is just so amazing. They tell these unique stories to each person, but weave the same threads, and you know, certain people just become like your heroes, and certain tropes they just spin on their head where it's like so-and-so's going to prison, you're like, oh no, and then they get to prison like it's not even bad here, you know?
Right. I was thinking of the exact storyline. I was like, oh man, they put her in prison, that's gonna suck, it's gonna be so boring. It's like, or it's gonna be fucking awesome and amazing, and she's even still going to get to interact with all the other instances of stuff.
Especially when there's such a, like, in that society, there's such a repressive state that women live in, and to find out, well, where do they send the women that don't fit? Prison.
Of course.
So it's like, actually, you know, you're thinking like, oh, it's going to be all these terrible women and it's oppression and the horrible stuff she's dealing with. And you know, there is some horrible stuff there. But when she gets there, you're just kind of like, oh, wait, she's freer than she was in real life.
Yes. It's almost like these are her people.
Amazing. I can't wait for season 2.
Me too. I'm so excited about it. And I also thought, I was saying not only was it the fact that the medium was not a movie, but specifically Netflix, where it was a serial that everybody got to watch at once. It's unique. I don't think that it would have played as well on HBO or ABC or whatever. It was so specific to Netflix. And I mean, I just think back to, you know, just a few years ago when Netflix changed its whole model and everything and everybody was talking shit about them. And now to see the type of original programming they brought to the table and the reasons why they made those moves, it reminds me of Marvel, where people were down their shit too, and now it's like, oh wait,
yeah, they totally delivered. And you know, they could have charged $20 a month for that shit and it'd still be worth it, because it's just that the stuff they're putting out is that good. I've watched Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Marco Polo in the last like couple weeks when I was sick, and I was floored by both of those as well. Not as floored as I was by Sense 8, but still, like, they're making incredible progress. Oh, and Daredevil was Daredevil.
Yeah, forget it, man.
So they just I'm so impressed by them. And yeah, Sense 8 was really one of the most fun times I've had watching anything.
Had you heard about it before? Because this was, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know the Wachowskis were making a TV show with Netflix, and I certainly had no idea the scope that they were going to be doing it in. It seemed to be all of a sudden it was there, and I was like, what's this thing?
Yeah, I heard about it before, you know, probably as a, like, passing topic on maybe the Nerd Off or something, and I'm sure we only talked about it for, like, 10 seconds or something.
Right.
But it was just kind of like, I do remember being very hopeful, because I was like, the Wachowski movies have always felt like they needed either an extra 3 hours and, you know, like, to make two more movies, or they needed to cut everything out and just make an hour and a half movie that was straightforward. And they never do. So you always end up with a movie that's way too long because it's 3 hours. And also way too short at the same time, because you don't get to explore this universe they built.
Mm.
Now we finally get a chance to explore the universe they built, and they don't waste a single second of time, man. It's such a beautiful, well-done craft. I can't recommend it enough.
Me either. I've been going on and on about it and just saying, I couldn't stop watching. It's the first show on Netflix. We didn't have Netflix until recently that I was like, yeah, I can't sleep because I got to watch episode 8. Like, I just couldn't stop. I really, for real, couldn't stop.
And the fact that they were able to make me care about 8 different stories. And if you really think about it, it's almost like 9 different stories, because you have the one guy who's in captivity, who's not part of their sense.
Right, Jonas. Right, right.
Yeah, so, like, it's almost like 9 stories, because they don't tell you his full background, but he plays a really big role in everything. And I cared about every single story.
Absolutely. I almost give it a 10 story, too, because there's a story of the cluster that's separate from their individual stories, too. There's so much of, you know, some of them falling in love with each other, some of them connecting with each other. So there's a lot of that, too. I agree with you 100%.
I love how their abilities come together.
Yes.
And, you know, like, because honestly, essentially the first, I want to say it's 12 episodes or 13 or something. Like, the first however many episodes is really just a training montage. Like, the whole, like, while you're also learning their stories, they're learning their powers.
Yep.
And by the end, when they're seamlessly,
like, taking over for one another and everything. Yes. Oh, my gosh. You're just like, oh, yeah, now they're going to need this. He's like, I can't drive, but I can. Like, that move, that second right there, I was like, this show is crazy good. Yeah, I just remember being like, yes.
The first time Nomi tapped into everybody, like, I think it was the police officer, and then Van Damme, and then Sun's powers.
Yes.
And that was like the first time they really did a
full one person got all of them. She needed them right then.
Yes. And that was the time where I was just like, okay, that was so cool. I can't wait for them to do that again. Yes. You know, and when basically the whole last episode is
was
just that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. What a
spoiler alert. Damn.
And I love the pairings that they did. Like, yes. You know, they were so non-traditional with it. How they played off each other and who needed what. Like when the Russian guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he.
Wolfgang
needed to lie. Who shows up for him? You know,
right.
that whole idea of that was just, I just thought it was
so. And the way they keep you on the edge of your seat, because you never know if it's going to happen, because sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes they get fucked up.
Yeah. Sometimes they're just like, all right, time to use my karate powers. It's like,
you don't got none.
Yeah, you ain't got no karate powers.
She's asleep right now. Exactly.
Right. Like, that is like the way they keep you so intense. They had me from the second Nomi went to the hospital. I was completely invested in that story. So. Yeah,
me too. And it was so smart of them to start with her story, because it really hooked me too. I remember thinking like, oh, she's got this disease. And then I was like, oh, shit, they trying to fuck this girl's brain up. Like, I remember being like that moment. I was like, oh, this is some other type shit. They really go in there with this. And it was so good.
When they show her mom and she was like that super thick Southern accent and like the church lady suit. And I was like, oh, this is like Girl Interrupted.
Like, talking about Michael. I was like, oh, hell no.
Oh, man. Everybody should be watching this if you haven't.
Y'all, watch it. Do it now. Whatever you got going on,
I wish someone would have watched it with me.
Well, you know, one of us has insomnia, one doesn't. What you going to do?
What you going to do?
As we usually do at the end of each show, we podcast stand. Of course, we're podcast standing for the Black Guy Who Tips this week. It is the first podcast I ever listened to with any regularity, and as I said at the top of the show, Rod is the godfather of Black podcasting, and I know so many of us out here start our shows because we look so much up to you. But independent of all of that shit, the show is fucking amazing, hilarious, so funny, heartwarming. You get everything. You get to hear Karen's epic rants, which for real is worth the price of admission alone. So make sure that you guys check that out. And again, you can go to theblackguywhotips.com. You can find Rod at Rodimus Prime. And what's your live tweet account so people can follow along with you doing that too?
It's Rod Live Tweets. And yeah, just it you know, I live tweeted Blade Runner, which I hated. And I live tweeted when I rewatched Game of Thrones and stuff for the show. I live tweet there, and I've been live tweeting Orphan Black, stuff like that.
I heard you talking about your live tweeting of Blade Runner, and I saw it, and it's been like 20 years since I've seen it. I guess I forgot like how inappropriate and rapey and all kind of, and a lot of movies from that era. We were just talking about Revenge of the Nerds. Like, dang, that really inappropriate text, like throughout the whole movie. And like, we loved it. Thought, oh, look, they're putting video cameras in the girls' bathrooms and taking nudie pictures. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, the rape thing is really scary because it's like almost like nice guy date rapey rape.
Yes.
So it's like it's that thing where like, no, she really wanted it after I made her want it. You're like,
Revenge of the Nerds is that same thing. He puts on the mask to pretend he's Darth Vader and goes and sleeps with a woman. And she thinks it's the jock, but it's the nerd. And she's like so overjoyed by this amazing sex. Like, I've never had a nerd before. That like now it's like cool. Like, you just pretend to be somebody else and fucking bang this chick. Like,
yeah, what kind of message is that? And then with the main problem I have with Blade Runner is that Blade Runners are basically slave catchers.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's a movie from the narrative of the hero's a slave catcher.
Yeah.
And then the happy ending is that the slave he raped, they run off together to the north where he swears he'll protect her for the 4 years that she, you know, or however long until she dies. Because she's an android, it has limited lifespan. I'm like, that's not a happy ending.
That's the opposite of an happy ending.
Yeah, and I'm like, really, Scott didn't know shit about race, man. Like, that's, he might, you know, have gotten something right with Alien and some gender things, but even the protagonist of Prometheus, I think, was a strong female lead. But yeah, he doesn't know shit about race, and that's why Exodus sucked as well.
Word. Word.
Good point.
Well, again, thank you so much, Rod, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. It was so good to have you on and chat about all these part bullshit and part funny topics with us for the night.
No problem, man. I do have one question for y'all. How did y'all find our podcast in the first place?
How did I find your podcast?
You started listening first, Leslie.
I don't know. I think I Googled Black Podcasts one day, and there you were. And I was like, what the hell is this, Black Podcasts? The Black Guy Who Tips, I laughed because, you know, that's just a funny running joke. And I used to be a restaurant manager, so I thought it was particularly funny, tickled me particularly. So that's how I found the show. And then I was like, Drew, you got to listen to this show. It's amazing. It's the only show we both listen to. So
no, we both listen to movie trailer reviews.
Oh, yeah, we listen to Chris. That's true. That's the only two. Everything else is you just listen to some stuff and I listen to other stuff. But I have more time than you. You have to like.
Glad y'all stuck around, man.
No, I mean, I just really enjoy the show so much. We both do. It's so funny. I mean, especially the weekend shows. That's like our relaxed time. We like do laundry and we just listen to you guys. So it's great. And the amount of content.
Also, don't forget, in 5 more months, You got to owe me $20.
I'm not giving up my $20.
When you were talking about arguing with people, like you introduced Leslie as like, you might remember her from arguments I've had with her on Facebook and Twitter. <It's> like,
yeah.
Yes. All that.
Yeah, man. Remember, if you're out here in podcast land, we're all rooting for Roger Goodell to just keep on trucking, man. I'm gonna be a rich man. I'm gonna spend Leslie's money on something that reprehensible that she hates. I haven't figured it out yet.
I assumed it would have been Bojangles. Just
No, Bojangles is awesome. What you talking about?
Something reprehensible she hates.
Yeah, I'm gonna find something.
I'll work on that. I got you
in the $20 range, and I think it was 20, and then. I got a reminder on my phone, so I think it was 20.
I have it in my phone too, so don't worry about that.
You both have it in your phone.
I did it.
Everyone root for Roger Goodell to not do or say anything racist or like
he's making too much money. They probably, if that report comes out, whatever they don't, because it's a closed thing. But I guarantee you, those owners made more money. They're still seeing double digit growth. He ain't going nowhere.
Well, I know he done pissed off Kraft now. We'll see. Anyways, we got 5 more months, so we'll see what happens.
What, because of Deflategate? You think Kraft is really that pissed about it? Come on,
that's his boy. He did come down a little hard on them. I was shocked. I was surprised. I'm gonna tell you that right now. I was real surprised.
I feel like there's a secret deal there.
Something happened.
Because Kraft gave up that argument, and I will be shocked if Tom Brady has to sit out all 4 of those games.
Tom, I'm not gonna get into that motherfucker. Anyways, they such cheat assholes though, Rob. For real, honestly, how can people defend these motherfuckers?
The only people that do it in New England, in Boston.
It is shocking to me anybody could even like put on anything that says anything to do with that organization.
I'll never let it go.
Never, ever, ever. And every fucking championship they got, fuck all of them. That's what I have to say about that.
I know both y'all don't care because it's hockey, but my Blackhawks just won. 3rd Stanley Cup in 6
congrats,
years.
Congrats, man.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Congrats to the Blackhawks, man.
Are you rooting for the new LeBron 2.0 in Cleveland, or are you Golden State and
now, you know Rod wants everybody to be pissed off. He petty, so you know he wants the Cavs to win.
Well, Karen is the one that is like 100% for the Cavs. The thing is, I played basketball with Steph for a couple summers, so it's really I can't root against Steph. So it's kind of win-win for me.
Sure.
But like I would have rather seen LeBron. I would rather see LeBron pull it off because it would be the most phenomenal thing I've ever seen in my life. But if they don't pull it off, I mean, come on, man. There's a consolation prize getting, you know, the homie from Charlotte winning a championship, being the MVP. Like,
that's going to be awesome. I mean,
come on, dog.
I'm rooting for Golden State.
I like Golden State, but when Steph gets hot and he's just hitting like threes, it's ridiculous.
He's just cool though. I just like him. And the person who said that I sounded like I was from the KKK is from Cleveland, so he lost. That's it.
Oh no,
it's over now.
It's over now.
I'm telling you, that's it. I put the juju on him. That's done.
I know he knows. He knows we're talking about him because he listens and shit. And I'm just gonna say I wasn't in it, and I'm sorry. And you got no idea. And she gonna just like get a new zip code or something. Cause that was the phrase. Hell hath no scorn. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorn. Save scorn, Leslie Mack.
Anyway,
hell hath no fury like her.
You can find us again at The Interracial John. That's JAWN.com. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. You can follow me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, MAC, and you can follow that dude at Very White Guy. We have some cool guests coming up. Jason Rosenberg later this week. Nick Jew's coming on in a couple of weeks. Rashani's coming on. And Carl, the unofficial associate producer of the show, will be on the 24th. So we'll see you then. Thanks again, Rod, for coming on. Tell Karen Risa hello. And we'll see you online and all that good stuff.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Bye. High five.